public responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Interfacing complete. Please stand by. Now downloading Tech Talk Radio with Dr. Richard Schertz and Jim Russ. Tech Talk Radio, it's technology you can understand. And now, here are Dr. Richard Schertz and Jim Russ.
Welcome to Tech Talk Radio. We are in the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University talking technology. I'm Dr. Richard Schertz.
And I'm Jim Russ.
And it was an exciting week in the world of Bitcoin this week.
Yeah.
Newsweek claimed that they discovered the creator of Bitcoin.
Yeah, that was some interesting watching, wasn't it?
The elusive man.
Uh-huh.
And so it's not clear that he's the guy, but it's an interesting story, and we'll talk more about that later in the show. And I'm also going to get to something that carried over from last week, which, of course, is the open source software catalog that DARPA has released.
Mm-hmm.
This is a great tool for those of you who want to learn code. And today we are going to feature a gentleman who started a company and recently sold it for $19 billion, which is really quite a nice piece
That's
of change.
Bad,
not
no.
Not bad. His name is Jan Koum, K-O-U-M, and he was born in the Ukraine, just outside of Kiev.
Mm-hmm.
And so with all of the news on the Ukraine this week, I thought he would be the perfect guy to feature.
You're being topical here.
I'm trying to be topical, yes, indeed. And, of course, it was a giant mailbag.
Big.
There's a letter in your mailbox.
Actually, two mailbags.
Like two mailbags.
Two mailbags, because it was just so big I could hardly do it. We got an email from John in Dale City. Dear Tech Talk, I don't have the installation media, that's commonly called a DVD disc, for Windows. What happens if my hard drive fails and I've got have to reinstall Windows? How can I prepare for this disaster? Thanks, John in Dale City. Well, that's a problem, John, because all the computer manufacturers are trying to save a few bucks and they don't deliver the media anymore. It's actually, they're no longer CDs, they're actually DVDs now, because the DVDs have more capacity on them. And many computer manufacturers, in fact, most of them are pre-installing Windows without giving the actual installation media. And now, normally when you purchase the computer online, for instance, you have an option for a few extra bucks to get full copies of the installation media. It could be $5 or $10. I'd recommend you do that. But and you still may be able to get it from your computer if it's recent enough. But if it's an older one, they may not have the specific installation copies for your particular item. Now, you just simply don't want the restore disk. You see, what they do is they actually install Windows in a hidden partition on your hard drive. And so the restore disk assumes that all the files are on your hard drive in the hidden partition, and it simply restores the operating system from the hidden partition to the main partition. And, of course, if your hard drive fails, there is no hidden partition, so it doesn't work. So you really need the full installation disk. That's very important. Now, if your hard drive has already failed, you've gone to the manufacturer, they don't have any install copies for you. Actually, your only option is to buy a retail copy. I mean, which means you got to buy another copy of Windows, which, you know, Microsoft doesn't mind that, actually. Now, you could go to eBay and try to get an older version, but be mindful of the fact that the older versions have to be for a particular, these specific versions for a particular computer have been configured for that computer. So if you get the wrong OEM version, it may not work on your machine. It could also be pirated. Now, what I would recommend, if your hard drive hasn't crashed yet, and if you cannot get the installation media, then you should do a full system backup. It's called disk imaging. You image the entire disk, and a program like Macrium Reflect, it's actually, you can download the free edition, download it from the web, and you can then essentially do a complete disk image of your hard drive, and you could image it onto an external hard drive, which might be convenient. Then you don't have to have 10 10 CDs that you, to keep track of it. And so, or you could have a one server at your house that you share among all the computers, and you could do disk images of all your other computers on that main server, or on that main shared computer. And then that way, if your hard drive fails, you simply basically reinstall the disk image on the new drive. Even if you put in a new hard drive, that would work perfectly. That's probably your best option. Now, make certain that when you back up the hard drive and do the disk image, that you image all partitions, including the hidden one, so you have everything. So that's probably your best bet. Now, of course, you have the other problem with having media on a DVD or a CD. Most of the new computers don't even have optical drives. So you sit there. I mean, my computer doesn't have an optical drive. I really don't have much use for it. I download everything. I don't use CDs or DVDs anymore. And if I want to watch a movie, I do Netflix. I never get them, you never get anything on DVD. And so what you want to do, if you do have bootable media on CD or DVD format, you're going to need an external DVD drive. So what you'd want to do is you'd set your computer so it would boot off of the USB port, and you get an external drive that plugs into the USB port. And you can buy like a 1 terabyte external drive that plugs into the USB port for around $70. I mean, they're just dirt cheap now. Yeah. But you could also buy a DVD driver. You could buy a Blu-ray driver that with a USB port for, probably $50, and then you'd be set. So that was a good question, and I think your best option, if your hard drive is still working, is to do that disk image. That's really the key. And your computer will prompt you to make a restore disk, but that restore disk is really not the full media, because that restore disk is, as I said earlier, going to assume that you can use the files in the hidden partition. We got an email from Brian in Kansas. Dear Doc and Jim, can someone install something on computer when they're not logged in? My roommate at school has a copy of spy software on his desk. I don't mind if he uses his machine to spy on himself, but I don't want him to spy on my machine.
Right.
Can this be installed on other computers which are password locked? I'm worried. Love the show, Brian. Well, Brian, you should be worried.
Uh-huh.
Now, actually, anybody who can physically access your computer can get into your computer. It's not secure.
Mm-hmm.
Physical control is everything, and the password locks only go so far. So if you go away from your machine for any length of time, and the door, and even while you're logged in, or if you're logged out, and you're, say, at class for 3 hours, anyone can walk up to your computer and do whatever they want, including downloading spyware or doing much worse. Now, suppose that they could actually put a CD in your computer, a bootable CD, and when your machine boots up, it's going to boot off the CD. At that point, they've got complete control of your machine because it's booted up on their media.
Uh-huh, yeah,
they could
put
in a bootable USB drive. And so then what they could do, once they have control of your computer, booting it up on their particular device, they could simply install any kind of spyware they would want on your computer. And there you would be.
And you would be none the wiser, right?
No, you'd be none the wiser. I mean, now you could if you've got good antivirus software, it's going to pick it up.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm going to talk a little bit later in the show about, or maybe next week, about somebody who's used this software to track people. But they could actually, once he gets on your machine, he could use remote access, and he could look at everything on your machine. He'd never have to have physical access with your machine again. He could do your key logging, he could check your passwords, he could turn on your webcam, he could do anything he'd want. He could send emails on your behalf because he'd have control of your machine. So these are your options. Option one is get a cabinet and lock up your entire computer.
Yeah.
No, that'd be option one. It's kind of a pain. Option two would be to password protect your BIOS. You can, you know, when your computer is booting up, you can click either the F5 key or the F7 key, and you take it into the BIOS mode. And there is an option, a security option in BIOS, where you can put in a password to your BIOS. So what will happen here, when your computer is turned on, it won't actually boot up until somebody puts in the BIOS password. So that's actually not a bad solution, and I would think that might be good enough for you. Now, of course, he could still, if he had physical access to the machine, he could remove the hard drive.
Sure.
He could set it up as an external hard drive. He could set it up as an external hard drive to his machine. He could copy files onto it. So it's still not that secure, but it's going to make it impossible for him to get into the system. Now, a more secure way would be to use whole disk encryption on your hard drive. So as soon as it accesses a hard drive, you actually have to put in a password. Now, that's actually quite good, because then if he removes your hard drive, he can't do anything with it because it's entirely encrypted. Of course, he could steal the hard drive.
Yes.
But so I'm sort of walking up better and better solutions. So the worst solution is lock up your machine.
Yes.
The next best solution is password protect your BIOS.
Right.
The next best solution is to encrypt your hard drive. And here's the best solution.
Take your computer with you.
Get a more trustworthy roommate.
Sometimes that's not as easy.
No, it isn't.
No, you know, there's paperwork, leases, and stuff like that.
I know. There are all kinds of things. And so these kind of programs have been used forever with people checking up on other people. So it's all kinds of stuff. So you can check your computer. Maybe spyware is already on it, so you may want to scan for it.
That's,
and the problem is some of the spyware is actually in a place where it's very difficult to detect.
You know, if he suspects something might be wrong, something might really be wrong.
That's right. That's what I'm thinking. We got an email from Alicia in Reston. Dear Tech Talk, I've heard about software that lets somebody take over my webcam and remove images. You know, there's kind of a theme here. Have you noticed that?
Record images, not
necessarily. And record images. Yeah. Should I cover my webcam when it's not in use? What are my options to protect myself? Thanks, Alicia.
Yeah.
Well, webcam infections, like any other kind of malware infections, can occur if you download a program that contains a Trojan.
Right.
Trojans, unlike viruses, do not spread through replication. Instead, they're hidden within programs that you install on purpose. And when the webcam hack occurs, the Trojan malware finds a way to activate the camera and control them without your knowledge. Now, and they've done it in a way that the little light doesn't turn on, so you don't even know the webcam is on. So if you don't want a webcam infection, avoid questionable websites, and do not install applications from sources you don't trust. So if somebody sends you an email, don't click on every stinking attachment that you find, because
especially if it says like .exe, right?
Yeah, so just be very careful. But there's a bigger problem than just the webcam, because if your camera can be manipulated, it means they're able to control your entire computer.
Right.
No matter, and they can do anything. And this is just generally speaking malware. And now we have many anti-malware tools. So what you want to do is update. You want to keep your computer updated with the latest security updates. You want to do anti-malware scans, antivirus scans, and because in addition to the webcam, they could record your keystrokes and get passwords to your bank accounts. They could corrupt your data. They could encrypt your data. You know, there's that crypto locker that encrypts the data, and then you have to pay a ransom to get your hard drive unencrypted. They could encrypt your data, or they could delete your data. I mean, they could do anything they want if they have control of it. So, or they could use your computer as a host to send thousands of email spams out to everybody, and everybody think that you were a spammer. So just be careful, and I think the biggest thing is don't open attachments or don't download anything you're not absolutely sure of. And there are some websites that if you go to, they will try to trick you to click on the link, so just be mindful. But this is a problem, and And it's getting a bigger and bigger problem. But I think as people become informed consumers, they get actually a little bit more acclimated to do the right thing and avoid these things.
May I have yes. an aside here?
Yes.
So we talked a few weeks ago about I'm going to set up this webcam at home to look at traffic outside mm-hmm. the window. And I ordered the camera. It's going to come next week. Mm-hmm. So you got my attention with this. This is going to be up on my Wi-Fi. Now, my Wi-Fi is password protected. So mm-hmm. somebody would have to crack the code on the Wi-Fi to get the password in order to have access to it.
Now,
right?
Here's the thing. If you're going to look at your webcam from another location, mm-hmm. you have to punch a hole in your firewall. So actually, yes. people have direct access to your webcam remotely.
Because I have to punch a hole in – oh, man.
So they have direct access to that. And so that is why the password is so critical.
The password on the Wi-Fi.
No, the password on your webcam.
On the webcam. Oh, so I'm going to come up with something that's absolutely...
Because what they do is they can search for these webcams because they have a public presence. They have a certain HTTP mm-hmm. Framework. So they can search for that, and then they can write robots to just start guessing passwords and try to crack into them.
Yikes.
So that particular password on your webcam, you want to have it very secure because that guy is open... to the world.
So nothing cute, nothing that's easily guessed.
Yeah,
something that's like, you know, because the password you get for, I think we have Comcast, is like some sort of 13-digit.
So pick up something like that.
Yeah.
That's fairly complicated. Because that particular webcam is open to the world. I'd also recommend that you get the latest firmware updates to the webcam.
Mm-hmm.
Because anything that has remote access has potential of being cracked.
Yikes.
And so, you know, remember there were some of these routers, Wi-Fi routers, that if you enabled remote access, you could actually crack into them because there was a security flaw in their authentication.
I'm glad we had
so,
this discussion.
So you just want to make certain you've got the latest firmware updates for your webcam. And I don't think it's really that dangerous, Jim, but it's just something to be mindful of.
I agree. Sure.
Okay, we got an email. Let's see. We got an email from Arnie. He's one of our regular listeners. Got an email from Arnie McKechnie.
Mm-hmm.
Dear Dr. Schertz, it looks like the FAA isn't going after you after all with your drone. The National Transportation Safety Board, Transportation Board, just ruled that the FAA cannot fine ever anybody for using small, hobby-sized commercial drones.
I heard this.
Because it hadn't made a legally binding rules against them.
Mm-hmm.
That went against everything the FAA has been claiming with regard to commercial drones and non-commercial drones. So they've appealed that decision. But to now, you're safe, Arnie. Arnie's keeping track of me because I just love to fly my drone higher than 400 feet.
Yes, you do.
I go
up
to 1,000
wow.
feet.
You went to 1,000 feet outside
just,
this window.
Yeah, we flew over next door, flew over the
over
police station.
Over the police station wow. at 1,000 feet.
We flew
feet.
Over the construction site and took pictures of the construction
airspace.
Site.
Impressive.
Yeah, so thank you, Arnie, for keeping me up to date. I'm certain that the FAA is tracking this radio program to see what's going on.
Gotcha.
The party don't start till I walk in.
Hi, folks. This is David Burke.
Don't stop, make it pop.
What a beautiful intro that is. That's,
you like
that's
that?
Nice.
Yeah, that's
good. Hey, Doc,
good.
I see the sweatshirt you're wearing. I groaned for drone, really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I'm sorry I missed that. That was I heard that was pretty hot.
You've missed a
it
lot
was.
Of stuff.
It was. I could bring the drone in.
Well,
I could fly it right out. I was actually,
know,
I was looking in the WTOP windows upstairs,
Doc,
with the drone.
Doc, please, cut it already. Right?
You know,
cut
the,
stop with the scientific overview. I know why you got the drone. It's going to be 50 to 60, and you're living over in a tawny neighborhood in Northern Virginia.
Tawny.
Yeah.
Very tawny. And I know why you'll be using
it,
drone.
I know.
It's
designed for the hot tub,
for the hot tub circuit.
Hot tub circuit, yes. You'll be doing passing, you know, flyovers daily, checking that action.
I think this is going to be more hovering than anything else.
A lot of hovering.
Yeah.
A lot of hovering. How much did that cost, Doc? I missed the original show.
$1,200.
$1,200.
$1,200, but it's got.
And you attach the camera.
No, it includes the camera.
It
includes the
camera.
It includes the camera.
Video or still shots?
Video. It's got. It's 14 megapixel camera.
Wow.
It does 1080p video. I got a 32 gigabyte storage.
He looks like a kid on Christmas Day.
Look at his face. Wi-Fi connection with my.
Look at his face.
I got Wi-Fi connection with my camera, and I look at the camera image with my iPhone.
Yeah.
I got an application on my iPhone, Dave. It's, wow. It's for $1,200. It's a deal.
That is a deal.
I got GPS.
Where did you buy it? Send the way for it. It was somewhere locally here.
What? Amazon.
Amazon.
I got it in 2 days. But there's a local support center in Maryland.
Oh, I'll bet.
That because you know because people crash their drones. People you know I crashed
like
my.
Him.
I was flying my drone over my neighbor's house next door.
Aren't you afraid of the wires?
And I crashed into the top of one of his tall trees and the drone fell to the ground. So I took it to the repair center in Maryland.
Wow.
They fixed it.
How much?
It was only like $70.
Oh, wow.
I'm up and running. I'm ready to go.
So do your neighbors complain? I mean. You're flying us around the house. I mean, in the backyard.
Okay, this is what I do, Dave.
There we go.
To placate the neighbors.
There we go. Okay.
I take aerial photographs of their house.
Oh, they love that.
They love that because they put them on Christmas cards and things. So then I take aerial photos of their house, and then I give them to all my neighbors, and so they're really happy.
Okay, I see now. Very nice.
See, there's a shot. We're going down. There's a shot looking down at the TOP building.
You know, Doc, on a serious note here, what if everybody gets a drone like you got? I mean, it's going to be a little crazy in the air, don't you think?
Well, that's when you got to put razor blades on your drone.
Okay, I got you. No.
You see, it's like the old days when people had too many kites, and you put string with sharp things, and you try to cut down the other guy's kite.
Doc, you've been in a room with a lot of open ink containers.
But listen, Arnie sent. Arnie. There is a problem. Arnie, my listener, did send me a YouTube video. A guy mounted a machine gun to a quadcopter.
Oh boy, here we go.
And he went up and he was firing this stinking machine gun.
Get out of here!
He was.
Where
I mean,
was he doing this?
I got a YouTube video of the
That's
guy.
Crazy.
And he has these dummies sitting at a table with gallons of gasoline. And he flew his drone up and he exploded the gasoline and blew up the house.
Wow. Unbelievable.
So the
Jimbo, are you going to the drone? You're coming over to show me some stuff.
So the problem with these drones, I think, is that they're going to go to a place that we don't want them to go, and then they're going to get outlawed.
Of course they are. You know that's going
to happen. But right now, I just love my drone.
How come this mini pad's choking up over here, Jimbo?
I don't know why it's choking up. Right, maybe the doc can fix it.
Well, Doc, I'm envious. I don't know if I have $1,200 to drop on a drone, but if they get cheaper,
I actually think you need it for WTOP reporting. I think it's a business expense, Dave.
I think it is, too. I'll see how the boss feels about that write-off.
I think it's a business expense.
Oh, look
that
at this.
That was 1,000 feet in the air.
Look at this. Oh, my goodness. That's crazy. I am watching on a little iPad your drone in action.
Here it is coming back to Earth.
It's coming back to Earth. The Eagle has landed.
Yes,
yes it has. Wow.
So you see,
very
Dave.
Nice.
So I'll bring in the drone sometime. So you can
bring it in again.
You can see
I'd like
it fly.
To do a story for TOP.
Okay, all right.
I really would.
All right.
That's fascinating.
Yeah, I'll bring it in. And we'll fly it over the construction site next door and get some close ups.
If you're
of those,
a trendsetter,
of those
I would imagine. I would be curious to know if anybody has bought one of those because of what you've done.
I have no idea.
I bet they would call the show right now and say, Doc,
yeah.
I followed your lead. I bought one of these. And this is what I'm doing with it.
Yeah, okay. And listen, if you
don't want to go there, do you?
Well, no, it's okay. They can call in.
No, you ignored that. You didn't want to go there.
But do not call in if you're in jail or in the police station.
No,
I'd prefer that not happen.
Doc, I have to leave you now, but I wanted to ask you if there's anything I need to know before I leave. Anything hot?
Well, they...
Because this is the hot place for new technology.
Okay, this is the thing.
Don't give me the stairway to the elevator.
Last week, they think they found the guy who created Bitcoin.
Oh yeah,
you've heard about
that. Did they put his face on some magazine somewhere? Was it on Huffington
Post? No, it was. They think they found him, and then of course when they interviewed him, he denied it all.
And
then somebody interviewed his brother, and they said, "Well, yeah, he's going to deny it. He's not going to tell anybody that." So see, he's living out in California.
Wow, stinking rich too.
No, he was into cryptography.
Oh,
he wasn't really doing it for the money, actually. Apparently,
right.
But he could be rich, but secretly rich.
Wow.
But he doesn't look rich. So that's actually the biggest biggest thing going on now.
Let's shift gears to non-technical stuff. I understand you're having the first pool party in April. Is that true?
Oh yeah,
at the estate.
Oh yeah,
Your drone will be grounded.
I'm going to be doing the flying the drone. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Now the other thing is that I'm going to talk later in the show that DARPA has released all their open source software, the catalog of open source software.
Doc, that's so like that seeing is a free movie for you. It really is. That's good stuff.
Now,
that's good stuff, man.
I am going to feature the guy today on Tech Talk. He was born in Ukraine, because this is very topical. He started a company, WhatsApp. Mm-hmm. He sold it after just four years, to Facebook for $19 billion.
19 with a B?
With a B.
Wow. He's working on that new app called Where Are the Russians? Yeah, I'm going to find
So I'm going to feature him. I mean, that's crazy money.
That's good. That's crazy
money.
$19 billion?
Yeah.
Listen,
$19 billion.
Some pocket change. Don't you think so, Jimbo?
Why not? You get some, buy yourself a drone. You two can have like battling drones.
We'll have drones. We'll have a formation.
So now, and the new trend in Silicon Valley, which I'm going to get into a little bit later, is meditation.
Get out of here. What does that have to do with technology?
Come on. Steve Jobs.
No. Stretch this one out. No,
Steve
make this
Jobs,
work.
Your here Apple boy. Steve Jobs, your Apple boy, went to India for 4 months.
So he did it, and it's okay now. Okay.
He went to India for 4 months.
Sure.
And he got married by a Zen Buddhist over there.
Right.
And so he came back, you know, as a changed man.
Wow.
So now they're calling it you become present. And they're saying you're rewiring your brain through meditation.
Rewiring your brain.
Yeah. So what they do is they call it hacking the brain.
Hacking the brain.
So this is the latest trend.
Yeah.
And Google has a lot of these workshops going on there. So that's a big trend, Dave.
All of a sudden, I've got a taste for apple butter. Where's that coming from? I don't know. Hey, Doc, it's been fun. I'm going to have to leave now. It's
beautiful music. We need
some meditation music.
Would you?
Could you bring some candles next week?
Yes,
and
I will.
Maybe
some
patchouli
oil as well.
I'm going to be heading to India for a couple of months and do a little meditation over there.
Listen, I'm taking the space elevator, and I'll see you guys later.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
All right. Okay. I'll email you when I bring in the drone, okay?
Really?
Okay, I'll do that.
All right. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
See ya. Okay, so, Doc, should we continue on with another email here?
No, I think we're done with the emails.
We're done with the emails here. Okay, this is good. Well, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio. This is Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, 820 AM, 107.7 FM HD2, and online at federalnewsradio.com. We'll have more of Tech Talk right after this.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
Technology is constantly changing. An effective IT manager must not only understand the possibilities and limitations of the technology, but also the requirements and constraints of the business world. Enhance your career today with a master's degree from Stratford University School of Computer Information Systems. Classes are offered day, evening, and weekends to match your busy schedule and are taught by experienced faculty members with industry experience. Earn your master's degree in as little as 15 months with an accelerated program in software engineering, information systems, information assurance, or telecommunications. Learn more about earning your master's degree from Stratford University at stratford.edu or call 1-800-444-0804. Disclose statements available at stratford.edu/disclosures. Stratford University, 1-800-444-0804.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. We are in the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University talking technology. And now it is time for
Profiles in IT.
Yes, today we're going to feature Jan Koum. I think that's correct. Jan Koum.
I think we'll run it past Google Translate.
Jan Koum
right.
is CEO and co-founder of WhatsApp. WhatsApp. It's a mobile messaging application that was acquired by Facebook February of 2014 for $19 billion.
Yikes.
Jan Koum was born February 24th, 1976, in Fostiv, Ukraine, just outside of Kiev. He moved with his mother and grandmother to Mountain View, California in 1992. They had absolutely no money. They applied for social support, and that social support helped his family get a two-bedroom apartment. At first, his mother worked as a babysitter, and he worked as a cleanup guy at the grocery store. In 1994, 4 years after he came, he became interested in programming. Of course, you're sitting there in Silicon Valley area. You say, well, what should I do? Should I go into landscaping or should I go into programming? It's kind of a no-brainer.
Yeah, right.
So he became interested in programming and enrolled in San Jose State University. See, he didn't have money, so he had to go to the San Jose State University. He couldn't go to, you know, one of the more swankier schools. Mm-hmm. But still, that school's right smack dab in the middle of Silicon Valley. While he was in school, he worked at Ernst & Young as a security tester. I'll tell you a little bit later why he knew so much about security, because he's in with the bad bunch. And while he was at Ernst & Young as security tester, he met Brian Action. He's the guy that we'd co-found WhatsApp with. That's a great name, isn't it?
It is. Brian Action. Brian Action.
Yeah. In 1997, he was hired by Yahoo as an infrastructure engineer. That means he's running the servers or the routers.
Okay.
In 2000, his mom died of cancer, and his father died in Ukraine. His father never came from the Ukraine to the U.S. His father died in 1997. I guess he was probably too sick to travel. That's why he didn't come to the U.S. So he was just here with his grandmother. The reason I wanted to feature him is that you can see how America has so much opportunity for people who just come from, you know, from all sorts of varied backgrounds. Mm-hmm. In September of 2007, Koum and Action, his new buddy, Brian Action and Jan Koum, they took off a year from Yahoo. This was in 2007, and they said, you know, we've got to find ourselves.
Oh, jeez.
This working every day on infrastructure at Yahoo.
This is a killer.
We got to find ourselves. So they took off a year, and they traveled around South America playing Ultimate Frisbee. Now, I don't really know what Ultimate Frisbee is, but you know, that's like a man sport.
I don't know.
Maybe Ultimate Frisbee. Maybe the frisbee is made out of iron or something. It's like a discus.
Razor blades on it.
I don't know. They played Ultimate Frisbee all around South America. Then in 2008, they came back to Silicon Valley. They said, "Okay, we're ready. We're ready to make hay in Silicon Valley," and they applied for jobs at Facebook,
mm-hmm.
and they were rejected.
No kidding.
Facebook turned them down. They said, no, you guys just don't have the kind of talent we're looking for. So in January 2009, he bought an iPhone. Jan Koum bought an iPhone.
That's where it all starts. Is when you get that first iPhone.
He got an iPhone. Up to that point, he had a Nokia. He loved his Nokia.
Flip phone, me, probably.
So, yeah, mm-hmm. he was sort of like you, and he got this iPhone. He said, hey, look at this iPhone. Look at these applications. And he saw the apps, and he says, you know, I'm thinking apps are going to be big. So he said, so he had an idea to make a messaging application, an instant messaging application that would work across all platforms. See, the problem is you could message an iPhone or you could message a BlackBerry. Everybody had their own messaging protocol, and he wanted to do kind of an open source messaging protocol that would cut across all platforms. And so he chose the name WhatsApp. He chose WhatsApp because it sounded like what's up.
Really? I never would have guessed that.
Oh, what's up? So you send somebody the message. Well, this is what's up. So that's WhatsApp. And on February 24th, 2009, which, by the way, you notice is his birthday because he was born February 24th, 1976. He incorporated WhatsApp in California, and he was the sole owner of WhatsApp at that moment. Now, early on, he wrote this application, and he could only get a few of his friends to install it. He couldn't get very many people to use it because it kept crashing. Mm-hmm. It really didn't work very well. And about a month later, after his friend said, you know, this app, this thing is just crashing, he went to Brian Action, his bud, who we met at Yahoo, and he says, Brian, I think I got to quit. I need to get a job. Sitting here, this, you know, working with WhatsApp that doesn't work and only giving it away to my friends, you know, it's hard for me, you know, to pay the bills. You know, I'm eating too many peanut butter and jelly sandwiches. My grandmother can only support me for so long. And I spent all of my savings with playing Frisbee in South America, playing Ultimate Frisbee. And Brian said, he says, Jan, you hang in there. This WhatsApp is going to be big. You hang in there. So he said, okay, all right, I'll try it a little bit longer. So it turned out in June of 2009, Apple launched push notifications. Now, push notifications are very neat in that it allows you to access an application that's not turned on. So, you know, like I've got, like the Viber phone that I have, even right. If Viber's turned off, somebody calls me, my Viber application opens up. So they supported push applications. And so what he did, he set up pinging where anytime somebody changed their status, like, I'm hungry. You know these status changes.
And then something from Burger King pops
yeah.
up.
Yeah. No. Oh, everybody in your network, even if their WhatsApp is turned off, is notified that you're hungry because you've changed your status. Now, I'm particularly not interested in that kind of notification.
No, nor am
but,
I.
But there was kind of a demand for that. And as soon as he added messaging. He added messaging to it, and as soon as he added the ping, the status ping plus the messaging, which was cross-platform, he got 250,000 active users.
Hmm.
So the thing was beginning to pick up. Now, it had made $0.
Sure.
So his grandmother's still supporting him. Now in October, Action sprung into action.
I knew that was coming.
Yeah. And he persuaded 5 ex-Yahoo friends to invest $250,000.
5 ex-Yahoos.
5 ex-Yahoos. You know, it's better being an ex-Yahoo than a Yahoo.
Of course, yes.
So he had the 5 ex-Yahoo friends invest $250,000. It's probably $50,000 each. And when he pulled together that financing deal, he was given a stake in the company, a percentage of the company, and he was granted the status of co-founder.
Mm-hmm.
So Brian Action is now co-founder because he pulled in this initial dollars. Now, Coombe then hired an L.A. friend, Chris Pfeiffer, to make the BlackBerry version for WhatsApp. Now, WhatsApp was switched from a free service to a paid service to avoid growing too fast because sending out all these texting verification texts costs money. They were spending a lot of money
sure.
on that. So WhatsApp uses an open source protocol called Extensible Messaging and Presence Protocol, XMPP. It's open source and it is understood by all of the platforms. So WhatsApp is supported by Android, by BlackBerry, by iPhone, by Nokia. Nokia, by the way, is still his favorite phone, and Windows. And the reason that both co-founders still carry their Nokia phone with them, because Nokia is a dominant phone in India, so they want to see how WhatsApp does on Nokia, so they want to actually have the kind of phone that's used in developing countries, so they keep their trusty Nokia phone with them at all times. By December of 2009, WhatsApp was for iPhone was updated to be able to send photos. By early 2011, WhatsApp was in the top 20 of all apps in the U.S. App Store. Mm. Now, at this point, the Silicon Valley PCs began to take notice. And the founders agreed to take an additional $8 million in addition to the initial $250,000 stake from Sequoia Capital so they could scale. you know, scale, that means hire more people and grow fast. Now, probably Sequoia brought in some hot dog managers to, because usually the founders are not necessarily good at scaling.
Mm-hmm.
Probably brought in some hot dog managers to really put some structure to this and scale it. By February 2013, WhatsApp had a user base of 200 million active users with a staff of 50.
Hmm.
Sequoia invested another $50 million, valuing WhatsApp at $1.5 billion. Now, this was in February of 2013. WhatsApp was valued by Sequoia at $1.5 billion, which is pretty good. So they valued at $1.5 billion, so $50 million is just like a few percent of the company. That's why the valuation matters.
Mm-hmm.
But get this. WhatsApp, it turned out that WhatsApp had teenagers were on it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Teenagers are leaving Facebook.
Yeah, they are.
Facebook is worried. So Zuckerberg is worried. Zuckerberg would like to create a communication infrastructure so that everybody goes into the Facebook ecosystem and they communicate in all kinds of ways. So he wanted to make WhatsApp part of their ecosystem so that they would hang around Facebook longer. So February 19th of 2014, just 1 year after Sequoia had valued it at $1.5 billion, Facebook bought it for $19 billion.
Wait a minute. The guys that wouldn't hire him originally bought it for $19 billion.
The guys who refused to hire Action and Coom bought it for $19
billion. Jeez.
Now, that's really insightful.
Yep.
Now, he got started on all this security stuff. So Jan Coom was part of a group of hackers called W00W00 was their code name. They call that Woo Woo.
God.
Now, while he was at Woo Woo, he met the future founders of Napster, Sean Fanning and Jordan Ritter. They founded Napster, which was a peer-to-peer deal. Now, although this elite group was not known really outside of hacking circles, these guys were pretty darn good. And its members have created more than a dozen companies, mostly in security.
Wow.
So what happened is these guys hack, and they hack into systems, and then they go work for companies as security specialists to close the holes that they've discovered as hackers.
Mm-hmm.
So there's kind of a symbiotic relationship for this. And this group, this hacking group, Woo Woo, they go to DEF CON every year. And so Sean likes to go back, or Jan Coom likes to go back and meet with these guys. Those are his buds. That's the founding group. And now I think I'm going to go back and look at Woo Woo now, and I'm going to try to trace more of the people who are members of Woo Woo to see what they've done.
That sounds interesting.
So there you've got the story of Jan Coom. I featured him this week because he was born in the Ukraine, and the Ukraine is in the news.
Let's go to Google Translates here and see what we've got.
Coom.
Coom, you got it. Very good.
Oh.
Coom.
Okay. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. This is Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, 820 AM, and 107.7 FM HD2. Hope you're paying attention. Your chance to win a fabulous prize for your knowledge comes up in the pop quiz here on Tech Talk on Federal News Radio. Be right back.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
Budget analyst, a vice president of sales. These are today's business leaders, and a degree from Stratford University's Tyson's Corner or Woodbridge campus offers you a powerful path to navigate the corporate world. The School of Business Administration at Stratford University offers both bachelor's and master's degree programs for a real-world education. In fact, many of today's Stratford business grads are working in their chosen fields. Make it work for you. Get working. Check us out on the web at stratford.edu. That's stratford.edu.
It's time. Time to put your talents out there on your terms and set your own pay. If you are ready to be your own CEO, Stratford University's life-changing Master's in Entrepreneurial Management covers the skills to launch your business from writing a solid business plan to financing, branding, and marketing. Choose from our convenient campus locations in Tyson's Corner and Woodbridge. Contact us today at stratford.edu. Stratford University. It's time to be more.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
It's time for Washington's most popular and longest-running radio game show, the Stratford University Pop Quiz. Now, here's your host and star of our show. No, it's not Gene Rayburn. It's not Alex Trebek. It's not Richard Dawson. It's Dr. Richard Schertz.
Welcome back to Tech Talk, the radio show of the airways.
Classroom.
Classroom of the airways. Yes, thank you so much. You know, I've just been droning way too much.
One of those propellers hit you in the noggin there?
That's right. Welcome back to Classroom of the Airways. Of course, if it's a classroom, there's going to be an assessment. This will be a summative assessment, as they say.
Oh, brother.
There'll be a pop quiz. And if you get the correct answer to the pop quiz, you win two tickets to fine dine at the Escoffier Dining Room or the Carême Dining Room. Earlier in the show, I was talking about Jan Koum, the co-founder of WhatsApp. Mm-hmm. How did he come up with the name WhatsApp? And if you get the correct answer to that pop quiz question, you will win two tickets to fine dining. Now, all you have to do is communicate your answer to us. Now, how's that done,
Jim? Time is running. I'm so glad you asked. If you're calling from east of Festiv, Ukraine... We'll get out. But before you do, call us at 877-936-9333. If you're calling from west of Mountain View, California, it's 877-936-9333. The wild card line is 877-936-9333. Of course, that wild card line is for everybody else on planet Earth. And if you're on the space elevator, how would you get in touch
with us?
That's
right. Or if you're in Crimea and you need to call because the Soviets have cut all the phone lines... You can reach us on Skype. Just go to Tech Talk Radio 1, and that'll be forwarded directly to the studio. And the good news is,
yes,
Skype is encrypted, so they won't know what you're talking about.
That's good. Excellent. All right, so while we're waiting for the phone,
well, let's talk about Bitcoin's creator is reported as being discovered.
Mm-hmm.
So there have been many theories about the true identity of the creator of Bitcoin. He goes by the name of Satoshi Nakamoto. Satoshi Nakamoto.
Uh-huh.
Now, nothing is conclusive about this guy, but Newsweek claims to have found Nakamoto, a 64-year-old Japanese-American man residing in California. He's living in a very understated life, as Newsweek said. And Nakamoto is said to no longer be connected to the digital currency that he's implicated in making.
Mm-hmm.
Now, whether he's still the true father of the Bitcoin is still up for discussion. After an eventful day of dodging reporters, he was running from reporters. They chased him in a multi-car chase all around Los Angeles.
Bro.
Nakamoto, when he was finally cornered by Associated Press, strongly denied that anything to do with the digital currency. In fact, he told AP that he never heard of Bitcoin until 3 weeks ago when his son told him that reporters called to ask about it.
Mm-hmm.
However, the Newsweek article quotes Nakamoto's brother as saying he'll never admit to starting Bitcoin. He'll deny everything.
Wow.
So as to say who is the true owner of Bitcoin, it still is yet to be seen. So, but the Satoshi Nakamoto in California posted on the P2P Foundation webpage, which is the forum for peer-to-peer currency, he stated that he is not Dorian Satoshi Nakamoto and that it's a misidentification. So the mystery still goes on. But it's quite intriguing because Bitcoin is, I think, here to stay, despite the fact that Mt. Gox went out of business.
That's funny. You said last week you thought they were done.
No, well, I switch around.
I'm not trying to cause a problem here. I'm just saying.
Last week they said, I said that was, well, Jim, this is actually, since last week I've done some serious meditation.
We'll get into that in a little bit.
I meditated about the future of Bitcoin.
I bet you have. All right, let's go to line two. Time is wasting. This is Dick who is calling us today from lovely Annandale, Virginia. Good morning. How are you, Dick?
Terrific. How are you?
I'm doing great. Doc, go ahead and ask the question,
yes,
please.
Yes, early in the show, I talked about Jan Koum, the co-founder of WhatsApp. Where did the name WhatsApp come from?
Because it sounded like WhatsApp.
That is correct. You win two tickets to Fine Dining, to Scoffier Dining Room. Just stay on the line and we'll get those tickets out to you next week.
And we're glad that you're not calling from Ukraine.
Crimea.
Yeah, Crimea. Either one. It's great. Dick, hang on. We're going to connect you with Andrew Mitchell, our adjunct professor for prize distribution and crowd control here on Tech Talk Radio. And indeed, this is, of course, Tech Talk Radio. Heard every week on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, 820 AM, 107.7 FM HD2. And we will be back with the end of our show coming up right after this.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
Application and software developers shape our world. Those who design and build these systems are the leaders we follow. The School of Computer Information Systems at Stratford University's Tyson's Corner or Woodbridge campus offers programs with a real-world, hands-on education. In fact, many of today's Stratford IT grads are working in their chosen field. Make it work for you. Stratford University. Get working. Check us out on the web at stratford.edu. That's stratford.edu. A rewarding future as a holistic caregiver or nurse practitioner. Combining the art of caring with the human science makes nursing today's breakout field. Stratford University's School of Nursing at the Tyson's Corner or Woodbridge campus offers a patient-centered approach with valuable core clinical training. Stratford provides a real-world education in nursing. In fact, many of today's Stratford nursing grads are working in their chosen fields. Make it work for you. Get working. Check us out on the web at stratford.edu. That's stratford.edu.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. We're in the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University talking technology. Now, I'm a big believer that the best way to learn how to program is to look at code that other people have written, mm-hmm. and you make small changes to it and see what it does. That's a very good way to accelerate your learning process of writing code. It's sort of like if you want to be a writer, you need to read books. So if you want to write good code, you need to look at good code. Well, there's a good source of new code that's been released. The DARPA the Defense Advanced Research Project Agency called DARPA has opened up some of its open source code for downloading and improving. You know, the idea of open source, you can download it, you can improve it. And like when they developed the internet, TCP/IP, that was funded by DARPA. It was all open source. So the entire protocol fueling the internet is an open source code protocol, and it became the worldwide standard. DARPA's open catalog organizes publicly releasable material from DARPA programs beginning with the X-Data program in the Information Innovation Office. X-Data was developed as an open source software library for big data, which is like the buzzword now, big mm-hmm. data. It'd be a good career move to learn a little bit about big data coding. DARPA has an open source strategy through X-Data and other innovation programs to help increase the impact of government investments. DARPA went on to claim that it's interested in building new groups and communities on the basis of its software and research. So if those communities show enough interest, the agency promised to open up more software, more publications, and more data, and even more experimental results. DARPA's open source software could prove useful to firms that deal with data analytics and power computing. Downloads include Numba, an open source optimizing compiler for Python, and Wings, a semantic workflow system designed to help scientists and researchers map out computational experiments. There's also Shark, a large-scale data warehouse system for Spark. as well as Tachyon, a fault-tolerant distributed file system designed to work at speeds across cluster frameworks. The initial open-source dump includes dozens of software platforms funded by DARPA and designed in collaboration with companies such as Boeing and universities and other open-source developers. Go to darpa.mil/opencatalog to find out all you need to know about that open-source catalog.
Very good.
Meditation and mindfulness in Silicon Valley. Google is conducting meditation classes in Silicon Valley as part of an internal course called Search Within Yourself. And this is part of a broad trend in Silicon Valley. It's designed to teach people to manage their emotions, making them better workers in the process. More than 1,000 Googlers... Those people that work at Google.
Googlers.
More than 1,000 Googlers have been through the search.
So we've had ex-Yahoos and Googlers today.
Yeah. More than 1,000 Googlers have been through the Search Within Yourself training. Another 400 or so are on the waiting list and are taking classes like neural self-hacking, managing your energy. There's a company-wide bi-monthly series of mindful lunches. Conducted in complete silence, except for the ringing of a prayer bell at the beginning of lunch. Google recently built a labyrinth for walking meditations. Across the valley, quiet contemplation is seen as the new caffeine, the fuel that unlocks productivity and creative bursts. There's a Search Inside Yourself Leadership Institute, now teaching the Google meditation methods. The co-founders of Twitter and Facebook have made contemplative practices key features of the new enterprises. They hold regular in-office meditation sessions, arranging for work routines that maximize mindfulness. This is not the New Valley.
No.
Steve Jobs spent months searching for gurus in India, and he was married by a Zen priest. Meditation here is an opportunity to reflect on existence, but it's a tool to make yourself better and to improve productivity because Silicon Valley wants return on investment,
yes.
ROI. Repeated studies have demonstrated that meditation can rewire how the brain responds to stress. Boston U researchers showed that after as little as 3.5 hours of meditation, subjects tend to react less emotionally to emotionally charged ideas. Other research suggests that meditation improves working memory and executive functions. Long-term practitioners show an increased ability to concentrate, even when there are fast-changing stimuli. Chad Mengtan, who leads the Google program, has been at the Google since 2000 and was employee 107. His initial attempts to bring meditation into the office met with limited success. It was only in 2007 when he packaged contemplative practices in a wrapper of emotional intelligence that he saw demand spike. Now there are dozens of employee development programs at Google that incorporate some aspects of meditation and mindfulness. Soren Gordhammer wrote a book, Wisdom 2.0, Ancient Secrets for the Creative and Constantly Connected, that offered tips for using technology in a mindful manner. He believes that you must disconnect from the grid to connect. This book wasn't really a bestseller, but got the idea to host a conference. So the event that he hosted in Silicon Valley was Wisdom 2.0. It was held April 2010. It drew hundreds of people. That was 3 years ago. Since then, the attendance of the now annual conference shot up to 500%. In 2013, nearly 1,700 signed up to hear people like Arianna Huffington, LinkedIn CEO Jeff Warner, Twitter co-founder Evan Williams, and, of course, Meng talk about how mindfulness makes a difference. So this is the key.
It is indeed. And we will see you next week here on Tech Talk Radio. If you missed the show, tuned in late, want to hear it again, it replays tomorrow at 7 o'clock.
This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
WFED Washington, WWFD Frederick, WWWT FM HD2 Manassas. This is Federal News Radio on the air at 1500 AM and online at federalnewsradio.com. The only radio station in the world dedicated to serving the federal executive and government contractor. It's our mission to provide news and information that helps federal managers do their job better and help facilitate the business of government. Federal News Radio talks to the people who make government work to build a sense of federal community, discuss best practices, and explore lessons learned. Every weekday from 6 a.m. to 7 p.m., Federal News Radio interviews federal newsmakers one-on-one to explain how their news affects agencies and contractors. The Washington, D.C. home of Navy athletics. Nights and weekends, WFED broadcasts all the action of the Navy midshipmen, George Washington Colonials, American University Eagles, Washington Nationals, and the Washington Capitals. Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.
Nats and Mets on the air today, coming up at 1 o'clock. Sunny, close to 60 degrees, 46
this
now.
This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors.